Ramsey TV.
Now, as far as jealousy goes, it's ordinarily a horrible thing. There's only one way that jealousy can actually be productive, and leave it to God to pierce that seam, to split that hair and cause it to happen for Israel. Going to show you that here. This is Martin Zunder. I'm at the edge of the bottom of the Florida Peninsula. This is where I like it. This is where God has me, and He has you exactly where He wants you. Now, I told you yesterday there's a series of dominoes here. A series. Is three a series? All right, there are three dominoes here. And everything will come back to benefit Israel, which is amazing how God does this. God uses Israel's sin to eventually come around. You see, they say what goes around comes around. In other words, if you do something bad to somebody, it's going to come around and bite you. If you do something good to somebody, it's going to come around and do good for you. What goes around comes around. But the way God alchemizes this situation with Israel, what goes around, which is complete crap on their part, evil jealousy, making an offense, committing a heinous, grievous sin, what goes around ends up coming around to eventually bless them. Only God could do this. It's a miracle of alchemy to turn jealousy into a benefit for Israel. But Paul says here, and I'm in Romans 11, verse 11, speaking of Israel, do they not trip that they should be falling? May it not be coming to that? But in their offense is salvation to the nations to provoke them to jealousy. Their offense, boom, domino number one, their offense is salvation to the nations. So because Israel offended and got themselves out of the kingdom, same thing, as I told you, happened when they were at the door of the promised land. Because of unbelief, they were pushed back. Well, relatively speaking, they were close to the kingdom when their Messiah was on earth. But because of unbelief, they were pushed back. Their offense is a salvation to the nations. So now the nations come in. We have an evangel. We're in the forefront. Not only spiritually, but politically. Going to show you that. It's a key later on in Romans 11. So their offense is salvation to the nations, yet this salvation that went to the nations is going to provoke Israel, third domino, it's Israel again, to jealousy, and that jealousy is actually going to cause them to concentrate, to appreciate their own calling. It's a very practical thing. Now, here's how jealousy is terrible. I remind you of 1 Corinthians 13, 4. This says, love is not jealous. Therefore, jealousy is not love. Jealousy is not love. Yeah, I had a friend who had a girlfriend, and she was so jealous. Many of you know people like this. Maybe you are one. Maybe you're suffering beneath one. Jealousy involves three people. To differentiate it from envy. Envy is two people, only needs two people. It's when you look at someone else and you want what they have. You resent that they have it and you don't have it. Jealousy involves a third party. With jealousy, someone else is taking away your little private pet. You have a little private pet, and someone else threatens to take it away from you. So you have to destroy the third party in order to keep your private pet. In other words, the happiness of your private pet or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever is not your key motivation. The happiness of that person. If you wanted that person to truly be happy, then wherever that person found happiness, it should be welcomed. And rather than pushing away the object of your affection, it generally draws the object of your affection closer to you because you're not strangling them. You're not squashing them with your love and care, which is actually not love and care at all. Because jealousy is not love. Love is not jealous. So when you have to destroy someone else so that your loved one doesn't get any satisfaction from anyone but you, that is evil. The Pharisees did this. The Pharisees' pet, their little pet was the people of Israel. The people of Israel who gave them tithes, who acknowledged them in the streets, who, you know, put them on a pedestal and worshiped them. They loved that. The Pharisees did. They used to love walking through the crowds and enjoying the oohs and ahs. What happened? Oh, this bumpkin from Nazareth came up and he started pulling away people from the Pharisees. Pharisees heard, what? He's got 5,000 people out in the wilderness and he's feeding them miraculously? More and more people are going to Jesus and our Lord is doing miracles. And this pulled away many people from the Pharisees. They were jealous. Oh no, they claimed to love their people. BS. No, if you love your people, you will free them to find happiness. If necessary, you free them. It could be, there could be a cooperative love going on here where the Pharisees say, oh, we love, this is what should have happened. The Pharisees say, oh, we love that our people are getting fed miraculously. We love the fact that this blind guy is made well. This blind guy can see. This blind guy from our congregation can now see. You would think they would celebrate that. Oh no, jealousy does not celebrate the object of one's affection being happy, being delivered, if the deliverance comes from some other source. You see, it's a selfishness. It's not love. It's complete selfishness. So they weren't happy and they had to destroy Jesus Christ. They had to destroy him. Why? Because he was pulling away their people. It's selfish. So their whole thing where we love our congregation, BS. You don't love your congregation. Because love is not jealous. You would have appreciated it. You should have said, this is our man. This is the Messiah. And then there's can be, this is what I'm going to get to with Israel. There's mutual benefit then. There is mutual benefit. Because you acknowledge that, okay, this man is greater than we are. And then you go to him like Nicodemus did, only you go as a nation and you say, hey, can we get in on this great program? Jesus will say, of course, I'll install you as my ministers. Thanks. But see, they couldn't do that because they wanted to be the top dogs. Arr, that was a bad mistake. Now, jealousy can actually work in someone's favor. This is a rare thing. You have to thread the needle to make this happen, and God did it. It happened to me one time. I need to explain this to you. I need to give you an example in my life of where I became jealous, and it worked to great effect because I didn't use it negatively to destroy someone. Was my pride involved? I'll let you be the judge. Let's see, 7 years ago, I was approached by a believer in California who had the means to publish a book. And he said to me, I might have told you this one other time, but it was a long time ago. He said to me, Martin Zender, you're the only guy I can think of who can write this book. I am commissioning you to write a book about Paul's gospel. We need all the different parts of Paul's gospel brought together in one book, and I can't think of a better guy to do it. Of course, I swelled with pride. I didn't swell with pride. No, I got to give myself more credit than that. I was pleased that someone had recognized my skill as a writer. And I acknowledged that. I said, thank you very much for recognizing my skill as a writer and my faithfulness to the evangel, my ability to get things right. I'll do it. I will do it. And I felt blessed. I felt benighted. Yes, I felt coronated for a job. I felt like I was anointed by a king. So what did I do? Ladies and gentlemen, I do what I always do. I procrastinated. I thought about that book for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I procrastinated. And then you're not going to believe what happened next. I get a call from my friend Dan Sheridan. And he said, this is probably 2012. No, 2012, nothing. This is 2010. I get a call from my fellow laborer at the time, Dan Sheridan, and he says, you'll never guess what happened to me. I said, what? Well, this individual in California, the same individual that had called me, he just commissioned me to write a book on the Apostle Paul. I said, what? What? Yeah. He said, I'd be a great guy to write a book on the Apostle Paul. Can you imagine how I felt? I said, you? Sheridan? I said, you're not a writer per se. I mean, you can write, but you're not a... He goes, yeah, I know, but I think I'm going to do it. This is what I said. I said, I said, okay, Dan, you go ahead and you write your little bookie on the Apostle Pauly. I'm going to start my book today, and my book is going to kick your book's ass. Let the games begin. Sheridan was all for it. He laughed. He knows how I am. And I did genuinely want him to write a great book. Okay, you got commissioned. Great. Buddy, do you know what? That drove me into my commission, my anointing. It drove me into it. I'm not kidding you. I went to my computer that day, and I wrote an outline of everything I wanted to say about Paul's gospel. I wrote it on my computer. And when I say I wrote it on my computer, I mean I wrote it in a pencil on my computer, on the case of my desktop computer. It was putty colored. And so I took a pencil. I wanted to make sure I wouldn't lose anything. If I write it on my computer like most normal people do, like with words in the computer, I don't know where stuff is because I'm very disorganized. So I thought, what better way not to lose it? I'll write it on the computer. So boom, boom, I wrote this whole outline on it. It's still there. My sister has a computer in storage in Canton. It's still there. That became my notes for the book, The First Idiot in Heaven. And ladies and gentlemen, I gave myself a quota. I said, I am going to write 1,500 to 2,000 words a day on The First Idiot in Heaven. That wasn't the first title of the book. The working title of the book was God's Radical. I tested that title. It didn't work for most people, and I changed it at the last minute. That's another story, but never mind. So I said, I'm going to work on this every day. I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to be like a soldier. And I did. Why? Because I'm picturing Sheridan over here working on his book. I'm picturing him working on his book, and I got to work on my book. Not only does my book have to be better than his, but it's got to come out before his. This is my commission, damn it. It's friendly competition. It's like Lennon and McCartney. You know, John would write Strawberry Fields, and Paul would go, that's a pretty good song. And then he'd have to write Penny Lane. And so they kept upping the ante, and that's the way they produced the greatest music ever written. So I didn't stop till I was finished. In 4 months, working every day, not missing a day, I was focused. And it was because of jealousy. I was jealous that the affection of my benighter, my benefactor, the guy who anointed me, was taken away from me and given to another guy. It was given to Dan Sheridan, of all people. But instead of me destroying Sheridan so that I could have the sole rights to writing the greatest book on the two gospels in existence, which it is, I used it to my advantage. I used that twinge of jealousy. You have to recognize it when it comes up. We are all subject to jealousy. You recognize it when it comes up, and you deal with it. And you use it, if you must, productively. That's what I did. I felt the twinge. I felt the twinge of jealousy. I'm like, damn, because Sheridan's not a stupid guy. Sheridan is very smart. And for all I knew, maybe he had some latent talent for writing. I'd never seen it on display. In fact, since then, Dan Sheridan has become a very competent writer, very good writer, in fact. Yeah, but see, I don't know. I don't want to talk about myself. Okay. God has given me some little thing that just, I don't know what it is. It's like, I call it fairy dust. I don't know what it is. It's like something that falls from the sky as I'm forming a sentence that puts something on it, some spin or some twist that kind of makes it float. I can't explain it. I don't know what it is. I'm always afraid every day that it's going to go away because I don't know why it happens or how it happens. It's like, I just call it fairy dust that gets sprinkled on my prose and turns it into something other than words on a page. I don't understand it. It's a gift. It comes from God, thank God. So anyway, I worked for 4 months straight, and I produced The First Idiot in Heaven. I sent it to my benefactor. I said, here's the book. And he said, great book. We ended up printing, I don't know, 6,000 of them. And they're out there. They're out there changing people's lives. They're out there bringing more members into the body of Christ because this is how God does it. You know this is how God does it. How can they hear unless someone is sent to them? How can they be sent unless they're commissioned, right? And, how can they hear? They have to hear this stuff, and happy are the feet of one bringing an evangel of good. So the feet, you know, it's work. You have to work every day. I had to get up every day, sit myself in front of that computer, look at what I had written, said, okay, I'll write about that today. Now I'll write about this. Now I'll write about that. Now I'll write about this. You keep writing, and then you're finished. It's like, I just finished a book. Then you have to edit it, of course. That's when the fairy dust comes in. That's what it sounds like. So there's jealousy. And this is what Paul's saying. So to provoke them to jealousy. I got time for a couple more verses. Then I'm sorry, I'm going to have to split for the weekend. I know. But if you're not aware of this, I publish a... I publish a greatest hits video every Saturday. Some people might not know that. Some people who only subscribe to my YouTube channel might not realize that I have a website channel. I mean, a website subscription place. So you can go to martinzetter.com, subscribe. Just scroll down until you see the subscribe thing. And you subscribe, you get some free literature. Big surprise. And you also get notified when I produce anything through my website, which is... Every Saturday is a classic video, and every Sunday is a classic newsletter. So here we go. One more verse, maybe two. Paul says, I can't go into this. This is what I'm going to go into Monday. I'm just going to read it right now, because this is so rich. Listen to this. If their offense, Israel's offense, is the world's riches, and their discomfiture, I'm going to read this. You think about this over the weekend, and then I'm going to... parse it. I'm going to detail it. I'm going to go into the guts of it. I'm going to gut this, and I'm going to show you the pearl, several pearls here in 1, 2, 3, 4, in the next four verses. If their offense is the world's riches and their discomfiture, that's a bad translation in the Concordant version. Don't know why they made the word Haitama into discomfiture. Going to talk about that Monday. If their discomfiture, the nation's riches, how much rather that which fills them. Oh, yeah. It's right here in this passage across the page at the end of the chapter. Now, to you I am saying, Paul speaking to the nations, inasmuch as indeed I am an apostle of the nations, I am glorifying my dispensation. If somehow I should be provoking those of my flesh to jealousy and should be saving some. Yes, jealousy, Paul's provocation of his own people is producing in them jealousy, which is not a good thing generally, but it's going to save some of them. How? In the same way my jealousy saved me from not writing the greatest book on the Apostle Paul. It's not bragging if it's a fact. Okay, I'm just stating the facts. Go to my website, martinzetter.com. You'll see books somewhere on the left side of the page. Go there, go to The First Idiot in Heaven, read about it. You can read an excerpt there, and I want you to order that book. I'm the apostle of the nations, glorifying my dispensation. If somehow I should be provoking those of my flesh to jealousy, should be saving some of them. What? Jealousy saves? This is a weird situation, but here it is with Israel. For if they're casting away, I told you they were cast away but not thrust away. If they're casting away is the conciliation of the world, what will the taking back be? If not life from among the dead. Israel's going to be taken back. Who else could invent this crazy path for Israel? Can you just try to think of what they've been through since the call of Abraham? Oh my gosh, one horrible thing after another. I mean, Joseph goes to Egypt and good things happen there, and then bad things happen there. Then they go into the wilderness, then they're pushed back because of unbelief, then they wander around, then the Messiah comes, then they kill him. Oh, sorry to bring that up, and it's just one seeming disaster after another. And but because of that, we have a great message of salvation. But leave it to God. What goes around comes around. When they find out what's happened to us, it's going to provoke them to write, finally, the greatest story ever told.